Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Mark Rank, who's a professor of social welfare at Washington University, St. Louis. He is widely recognized as one of the foremost experts and speakers in the country on income inequality, poverty, and social justice. And also joining us is Thomas Herschel, who's a professor of development sociology at Cornell University. He's the director of the Population and Development Program, coordinator of the program Work Team on Poverty and Economic Hardship, and director of the Teen Assessment Project. Together, they are the co-authors with Kirk Foster of the new book, Chasing the American Dream, Understanding What Shapes Our Fortunes. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Mark Rank and Thomas Herschel.
Thanks for having us on, Ian.
Yeah, thank you.
And let me begin with Mark Rank. Obviously, Mark, the issue of income inequality is out there in the political zeitgeist, and it's clearly going to be an issue in this forthcoming election in this year in November, midterm elections. Of course, the turnout's never usually half of what it is in presidential elections, but it could be a very critical issue, particularly on the with the Democrats. So far, how hard do you think the political world is adopting, absorbing, and reacting to the work that you and your co-authors have done?
Well, I think there has been some attention focused on it. President Obama in December made a speech, a pretty important speech on the whole issue of economic inequality, and he cited some of the work that Tom and I have done on poverty. That is, that over half of adults can expect at some point to spend at least 1 year below the poverty line. So I think some of it is starting to get attention, and you're right, this is a very important issue that's becoming, you know, one of the major political topics out there.
But my understanding, Tom Herschel, was that before your book came out, the AP did a story, and I remember interviewing you at the time, saying that up to, what, 80% of Americans at one point in their lives experience poverty, or at least the potential for homelessness and hunger?
That's correct, Ian. We set up a sort of a, Mark and I set up an economic adversity scale, which was unemployment, use of the social safety net, and poverty, or near poverty. And we found out that 80% of the people in the country experience one of those events at least once, and most people experience it more than once. And I think what this is kind of getting at is this question of, you know, we really need to start to look at cause and effect. What is the cause of this? And then really try to deal with this effectively, because people, I think, are being affected by it, but maybe they're not admitting it to their neighbors or even to themselves. And this is something that really needs to be brought into the light of public discourse.
But you would think that if 4 out of 5 Americans have experienced that kind of vulnerability and faced these prospects of hunger and homelessness and unemployment, you would think that this would be a walk-in for in this election year for whoever picks up this subject matter. But my understanding is that what's likely to happen in this midterm election is that all of the Republicans are likely to show up, and the president himself has been complaining about complacency amongst the Democrats and saying they have a congenital defect, and that is that they don't show up in midterms. So is it simply an unfortunate fact that the people who have most to gain from voting because their interests aren't being addressed are the least likely to show up? In other words, even if you discount the idea that 4 out of 5 people have faced poverty and hardship, you would think that at least, you know, there'd be some statistics that indicate that there'd be enough motivation on the part of these people to vote, but apparently they don't.
Right. I think voting is, sometimes seen as a symbolic thing. It's also, there are constraints on voting. You know, some states are setting up laws, you know, identification laws to try to discourage people from, try to keep the turnout down. And I think there's a lot of politics going on. One of the most fundamental things, I think, is that big money is really, has a lot to say about both political parties. And so you have a situation where the people that have the most influence tend to be the better off people in society. So politics tends to reflect that kind of dynamic. And I think, however, I think that is starting to change. And I think the, you know, Obama, you know, what Mark said earlier about Obama acknowledging our work in one of his talks, that's what that's getting at, that people are saying, yeah, we do need to start to talk about this, but we're not really very far down the road yet.
So, Mark, what is your explanation for why it is that so many Americans have experienced the portent of poverty, homelessness, and unemployment? 4 out of 5, that's an awful lot, and yet somehow that doesn't translate in voting, that people don't show up and vote in their interests.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of work on that. A person by the name of Robert Frank wrote a book a long time ago on why people tend not to vote their economic interests. And his thesis was that people are voting on social grounds rather than economic grounds. So they're socially conservative and voting for, you know, in this case, the Republican Party, which is probably not in their best economic interest. So you have that. You also have in our research, what we show is that while a lot of people will experience economic insecurity and poverty, most folks do so for a fairly short amount of time. So it may be also that people think, well, you know, I got through that. Others can get through it as well. So that may be part of it.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Rank, who's professor of social welfare at Washington University, St. Louis. He's widely recognized as one of the foremost experts and speakers in the country on income inequality, poverty, and social justice. And also joining us is Thomas Herschel, a professor of development sociology at Cornell University. He's the director of the Population and Development Program, coordinator of the program work team on poverty and economic hardship, and director of the Teen Assessment Program. Together, they are the co-authors with Kirk Foster of the new book, Chasing the American Dream: Understanding What Shapes Our Fortunes. So just to touch, to get back to your book and leave the leave the politics to the voters in November, whether or not they show up. What's your sense then, Mark Rank, of why it is then that given these horrendous statistics that you have uncovered and shown us, why is it that people aren't more angry at the basic injustice? I mean, the idea that one family in America, the Walton families, all of whom through an accident of birth ended up inheriting the Walmart fortune, and together this family, its wealth is equal to, my understanding, the bottom 40% of all working American families. It would seem to me that when, you know, and by the way, the president just spoke at a Walmart the other day congratulating them on going green without talking about the fact that they don't pay their workers a living wage. So what's your understanding of the lack of outrage?
Well, I think one reason is, and we get to this in a sense in thinking about what the American dream is that America has always had a strong theme of individualism and self-reliance, and that you make it on your own, that you're able to climb that ladder of opportunity, and there's a strong belief in that. Now, whether that's true or not, that's something that we look at in the book, and we actually find that there's a lot of volatility, both up and downward mobility. But, you know, people believe, and this came through in many of the interviews that we did, people believe that with enough hard work and effort that they will in their life be able to do okay and to achieve the American dream. So I think part of the reason for that there isn't more outrage is that our country is really steeped in the notion of individualism and self-reliance.
So, Thomas Herschel, do you think, though, that there is any evidence that the Horatio Alger myth is operating, given the oligarchical nature of our society and how much inherited wealth is passed on and how much of it's concentrated?
Well, I think you know, what Mark said is really important, that we need to understand kind of the foundation of where the country is coming from. I think the country is also changing very rapidly right now, especially given the high-tech society that we're entering into, where we have, you know, computers that can begin to replace the labor of people in the workforce. That's one really important dynamic that's been sort of set loose. And so I think, and we do see a lot of people, I mean, what Mark said is really important, but I think if you sort of scan the news now, you see something like, for example, from one side of the political spectrum, the Tea Party saying, it's not just enough for me to vote for Republican. I want to change the rules of the game and, you know, shrink the government or whatever. And you have movements like the Moral Monday movement in North Carolina and some of the other southern states, where people are saying this system is immoral, and they're going down to the courthouse, and you know, over 1,000 people have been arrested. So I think that we are beginning to see these kind of flashes of consciousness, that people are saying, yes, we have these ideas, and really the American dream is kind of this idea that if I do my work and I play by the rules, I'll get ahead. And people are saying, well, I think the Occupy movement was also another expression of that. You know, the people have been out on the labor market after graduating from college, and they still haven't got they haven't found stable employment. So I think people are beginning to question the way this system is working. And so I think we hope that our book will add to that discussion significantly.
Although I will add to what Tom said that we did find at the very top end, there's actually a fair amount of fluidity of folks that hit some of those high-end points of the income distribution. So one statistic that's gotten picked up in recent news is that we looked at the percentage of the population who at some point would find themselves in the top 1% of the income distribution, and we found that 12% of the overall population will at some point between 25 and 60 find themselves in the top 1%. So the idea that the 1% is a static group that's there and it's the same people year in and year out is really an incorrect view. It's much more fluid than what a lot of people imagine.
Well, there's one exemplar of the 1%, and I certainly don't want to tar the rest of America's billionaires with the same brush as Donald Sterling, but there's, I must say, you're dealing with a really sleazy sociopath there.
Well, I don't have any research evidence in terms.
Well, I tell you, I know it's not a, I'm blindsiding you with a somewhat irrelevant question, but I would just, you know, as a journalist, that just offends me so much that CNN offers this guy a platform. You know, this sort of totally disgusting reptile of a human being. You know, it's just all it does is make you sort of even more angry at the idea that these are people that we consider newsmakers. But back to the subject at hand here, let me ask you, Mark Ranker, what would you then consider, given that so much of the propaganda about the American dream that keeps this myth alive in the face of evidence to the contrary, what could you identify in our country as a real meritocracy?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I as you were talking, I was thinking, really, one thing that we should be clear about is what is the American dream? And in our book, we talk about three aspects of the American dream that sometimes people don't necessarily think about immediately when they think of the American dream, but they turned out to be really important. The first aspect is that people are able to really follow their passions and follow their interests and to really reach their full potential, whatever that may be. That's one aspect. The second aspect is what Tom talked about earlier, that if you work hard, you should be able to be economically secure and raise a family and do okay from an economic perspective. And the third really important element of the American dream is the idea of hope and optimism. That is, that things will get better in my life, they'll get better in my children's lives, and that I will be able to address positively in the future challenges that I face. And that's a third big component of the American dream. So, you know, I think that this is really the heart and soul of the country. This is a really important aspect, and that's why, you know, when we talk to people, they were very strong about that this is an important element of America, and we seem to be losing this, and this is really, really a critical issue. It's, you know, as important as the issue of economic inequality that we were talking about earlier.
So, Thomas Herschel, would you consider the U.S. military to be a meritocracy?
Well, I think the U.S. military has been very carefully has very carefully inculcated kind of a multicultural leadership. So you have a leader like Colin Powell, for example, that's a very important part of America's foreign policy, that you have a kind of affirmative action program. And I think actually, no. But my answer to you is no, though, that what you really have is it's an apparent means of economic mobility for the poor, and it's a very unfair system that we're fighting these wars since 2003. And it's basically an economic draft. The people that face this choice of, well, do I go to college and go into debt because my family certainly can't afford the the bills? Do I go get a job where I'm not going to get ahead, a low-wage job, or do I go in the military and risk, you know, going into harm's way? And so I think, no, it's actually a very unfair system that we have right now.
Well, Dr. Mark Rank, surely the college and student debt that Thomas just brought up, isn't that a huge drag on social mobility in this country if the younger generation are indentured? And one of the most outrageous things that goes on in Washington, which I've done some coverage on, is these for-profit colleges that take your taxpayer money, advertise incredibly, saturate the airwaves with these bogus new colleges that come out of nowhere, and get these kids indentured for life on basically by borrowing money from the government and then charging it back to these kids at enormous interest rates. Many of these kids are expiring minorities and veterans. And then, you know, they find that they have a worthless diploma and a lifetime of debt. I just don't understand how that kind of onerous outrage that is so much, it's a bipartisan scandal in Washington. The for-profit college people have a massive and powerful lobby, and you know, yet they are the antithesis of the American dream. They're the ones that are killing the dream.
Right, and even to go back further than that, if we think about the quality of education that children are getting in primary and secondary schools, It's the United States is unusual in that we fund much of our schooling on the basis of local property tax. And so you have this wide discrepancy in the quality of education that students are getting. Some students are getting a superb education. Others who are living in poor neighborhoods and so on and so forth are getting a substandard education. And that's simply un-American. You know, we say with liberty and justice for all. We don't say for liberty and justice for some or for most. It should be for all. And if it means for all, then we need to address this educational discrepancies that you're talking about at the higher level and also at the primary and the secondary school levels.
So, Thomas Herschel, in terms of, you know, you mentioned the idea that 4 out of 5 Americans at some point or other, this is what your studies come up with, that have faced unemployment, poverty, and hunger. And so they've all, you know, 4 out of 5 of our fellow citizens have stared into the abyss. So is there a sense then that we are able to come up with ideas of how to employ people? You mentioned earlier the changing sort of globalized workforce, et cetera, and the possibility of computers and robots taking over. What's your sense of whether or not there's any creative thinking going on the future of work?
I think this question you're asking, Ian, is absolutely central. That, you know, that's what our book is designed to do. We need to start, you know, having a Democrat. There are elites talking about this in think tanks in Washington, D.C. This is, the future of the labor market is a very central question. And the labor market's been shrinking as a percent of the population since the year 2000. And it really went down in 2000 when the 2007-08 recession hit. And it hasn't come back up again at all significantly. So I think this is actually something that we're not doing anything about in any kind of creative way. And I think one of the things we need to recognize is that people's self-worth is really a function of their ability. People want to contribute to society. People, Americans, this thing of, you know, I want to work hard, but I want to feel secure for that. People want to contribute something. They want to contribute their special skill, their idea. And I think that we need to begin to set up a system that really is able to account for people's contributions.
Well, Dr. Mark Rank and Thomas Herschel, I thank both of you for joining us here today.
Thanks for having us, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Mark Rank, who is professor of social welfare at Washington University, St. Louis. He is widely recognized as one of the foremost experts and speakers in the country on income inequality, poverty, and social justice. And also joining us was Thomas Herschel, professor of development sociology at Cornell University. He's the director of the Population and Development Program, coordinator of the program work team on poverty and economic hardship, and director of the Teen Assessment Program. Together, they are the co-authors with Kirk Foster of the new book, Chasing the American Dream, Understanding What Shapes Our Fortunes. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.